Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SMB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder, to join us, we have TalkCast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you want to reach me via Twitter. My Twitter account is sfuoncall. Also, my personal account is Paul Franz. That's P-A-U-F-R-A-N-Z. Obviously, if you follow me, you know that I'm heavy on tech and being Catholic. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. Steve Cole is busy working on Federation Commander PBM cards. That's to increase the library that's currently on the online clients, including the Andromedans. Many of the missing cards, including X-ships, which will be added to the library as soon as possible. Obviously, it takes a little bit of work to convert the cards into what's called ship definitions. I will be doing those as quickly as possible. Also, new on the Starfleet Games order, you know, their product page, i.e. their store, is booster number, Federation Commander booster number 37. That includes the Federation Light Command Cruiser, Federation Command War Destroyer, the Zinni Medium Command Cruiser, the Zinni War Destroyer Leader, the Tholian War Cruiser Leader, the Hydran Lion Hunter War Destroyer Leader. That's a mouthful. Hydran Warrior Destroyer Leader, and the Hydran Apache Medium Command Cruiser. Wow. And also, Federation Commander Booster Number 38, which is the Klingon DFL War Cruiser Leader, the Klingon F5L, the Frigate Leader, the Klingon F5WC War Destroyer Leader, the Liren Jaguar War Cruiser Leader, the Liren Alicat War Destroyer Leader, the Wind Cluster War Destroyer War Cruiser Leader. Too many War Destroyers. Okay, it's got me going there. Okay, and the Vudar War Cruiser Leader and the Vudar War Destroyer Leader. Hey, why didn't the Wind get a War Destroyer Leader? I don't know. That's just weird. But anyway, moving on to the SMB Online Tournament. The Sapphire Star Tournament 4 got four games that have been completed as of this recording. Two are currently being played. Last time I checked in, which was just like 30 minutes ago or so. Also, my game had to be restarted, my round one game, because there was an error on my opponent. He realized it. We contacted Steve Petrick, and he said, restart. So it's like, okay, we're restarting. We're going to start playing on Friday night. That's tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern time. So if you are available and you'll listen to this podcast before that time, you can actually watch yours truly playing the Andromedan versus the Gorn. This should be an interesting setup. The Andromeda has two TRLs, six phaser twos, also three batteries, and I think 28 power. So it's not a bad ship. It's just not that good of a heavy ship. I really want to change that ship greatly. But we'll have to wait and see, and maybe I can convince Mr. Petrick to modify that in the future after playing a few more games. Going on to online client stuff, actually, I have been working on supporting the Andromeda systems for the Federation Commander portion of the client so that people will be able to play the Andromeda, especially myself. Moving onward to the library. No progress this week. There have been some updates and fixes for the library that have been posted up. When it comes to some of the ship definitions, that's one thing that's really great about having some campaigns running on the SSB Online, which is those ships that normally some people rarely play actually get played. So they can find all these errors that are in the ship definitions. So, but the complete conversion still stays at 2,522, yet to be converted, with 799 with a percent complete to be 75.94%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, the once and the only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got Gary, we've got Dave. Barry is off sleeping because he was tired. Which is fine, because Lord knows there are some topics that he's not nearly as interested in that I am. And I know Gary is interested in. And tonight's topic is Federation Commander. It's a wonderful game. And actually, one reason why I definitely piqued my interest as of late is because I have been working with Steve Cole. Lately, it was, it's funny. The original idea of why I contacted Steve Cole is because I wanted to add Andromedan support into the, you know, the FedCom Online client so people could play the Andromedans. And well, okay, I'm being a little selfish. I wanted to play Andromedans. And to do that, yeah, I can work on the system to work on behind things, but until I actually have ship cards, so I actually can interact with them on in the online client, it's all pointless. I can't do much. So I went, oh, hey, Steve, can you do a favor for me? Can you just send me a few cards? You know, the main one, I mainly need this one and this one. But, you know, because I know you're busy and all that. So that, you know, after that, I'll be fine. Well, that just started something with Steve. Because he sent me the Andromedans, and he just kept going. So we're catching up on things that were missed the first time around, the first time things were added to the library. And right now, he asked me, oh, do you want the X-ships? I went, sure, why not? So that's another thing I'm gonna be working on this week. And now that's one of the topics that we will be discussing tonight, which actually is the X-ships rules when it comes to Federation Commander. Because to be honest, I totally forgot that they were added on Caps Log number 53. Gary just pointed out in the pre-show that they were added, and that as something be just fits nicely into the Federation Commander discussion, because obviously we, in addition to X-ships and Federation Commander, we can talk about the rules, how they overall work. Obviously, I've discussed this topic before, but it's been many, many years since then, so I figured it's also a good time to revisit it. Obviously, one of the things I'll probably talk about is maybe the Andromeda rules some, but overall, you know, we'll have a nice discussion about Veterans Commander. It's a nice gaming system. It's much more simplified than SFB. In theory, Federation Commander initially was designed to be a faster SFB. You know, still same systems. You know, overall same feel as SFB. Simplified to a certain degree, but it's its own game, you know. So it's not FedCom is not SFB, and SFB is not FedCom. And Lord knows there's definitely some rules that internally applies. And Lord knows when FedCom first came out, just to give you a little historical context, when Federation Commander first came out, there was a discussion back in that day about porting some of those Federation Commander rules back to SFB. For example, the whole idea of we have what's called a tactic called Kaufman Retrograde. The only way this is even at all possible is because the cost of moving going forward is the same cost as going backwards. Now, that changes in Federation Commander in that it's double. And that's one of those rules that people are talking about going back and saying, you know, that's something we should do. You know, add that, put that into SFB. Another one, I don't remember if we did discuss, if this was discussed, but, you know, obviously one of those things that could have been discussed, I don't remember it, but, you know, the reverse movement was one I definitely remember explicitly. Is, of course, SEAL reinforcement. What's the big thing with SEAL reinforcement, SFB? If you stop all that power of the ship, you can put that towards reinforcement. And then you can just put this one. And then, of course, there's the tact. You can do tacking in SFB, which tacks are done after everybody else moves. So basically, you start a castle, you are in a really good defensive position. Problem with that is you're a really good defensive position where you can just sit there and it's called star castling. And if any of you people are old enough to remember the video game called Star Castle, which I really liked Star Castle. It's a vector-based game where what in the middle of the board was a ship, and there were two rotating shields. You knock down one of the panels of the shield, and it kept on going around. The idea is that you knock out one from the outer layer and one from the inner layer, or at least, you know, maybe some from outer. The idea is to get a shot from the outside all the way to the inside. And to do that, you have to knock out a few panels on the outside, possibly if you can, as good as one. And then you have to knock out an internal, at least one panel, if not more. So then your shot can go all the way through. Now, the issue is that if you let it go too long, the inner shield becomes the outer shield. Or if you blow away the whole outer shield, the inner shield becomes the outer shield. And then you have to start over all over again. And at the same time, he's firing out. I'm pretty sure he could fire this massive thing, would rotate and basically fire at you. And then I'm pretty sure he could fire through its shields. You know, unlike you, which are trying to get through the Star Castle ship. You know, so that's why when you stop and spin, it's called Star Castling. That's a little bit of history there. But anyway, you know, the whole idea was that with SFB, there was a lot of abuse because of the way the systems worked. You know, and ThinkCom definitely upended that in the effort to slimline, not slimline, but make things a lot more streamlined. That's what I'm looking for. And hopefully, you know, that was the hope. And unfortunately, that hope did not work. And let me do this. I forgot. Sorry. I just brought up my Twitch. And if you heard that, that was an echo. So with that in mind, Gary, I know you're quite familiar with Federation Commander, aren't you?
Well, in terms of pouring over the rules, I hope so. But I guess one thing I actually wanted to remind again is that in terms of timing, like not only do we have the X-Ship rules, the playtest ones in CL53 and now going on to the FedCal Online, but they're now starting to show up on Shapeways too. We've spoken about it in the past about the ships like the Klingon DX and the Sparrowhawk X where I've gone up, which is ironic because none of those ships actually have playtest ship cards yet. But... So I'm hoping that we'll see a few X-ships like the GSX, the Advanced Galactic Survey Cruiser, up there. And time will tell. Because I guess a lot of it depends on the scheduling, the shape, in terms of like when the artists are able to assemble each different design or whatever. So
right, which does definitely brings up a topic on its own, which of course with the GSC and the Scouts that are part of Federation Commander, they're very limited given the rules. You know, special sensors, in SFB, you have electronic warfare, and Scouts are kind of important for electronic warfare. While the special sensor in Federation Commander are much more limited in what they actually can do. So,
there has been an idea floated around that... the rules that you see for Scouts would be relatively basic in quote-unquote vanilla FedCom. And then there's been this rather nebulous concept called Borders of Madness.
Right.
And that would basically be for concepts which would not be a part of the regular game system, so you can't oblige another player to accept them, but they'd be optional rules that would be not quite as complex as an SFB, but they'd be more complex than vanilla FC. So it's been suggested that in theory, you could do a more in-depth set of sensor rules at that level. And also you could use the border surveillance for things like maulers or for, I'm not sure whether or not fighters are actually going to be borders of madness or if they're going to be vanilla FC, because there's some people that would want fighters, only the Hydrants to have fighters in the vanilla game.
Right.
And other people who would want, even just with basically the playtest fighter rules, they're online actually, I think, in an issue of Communique. There's a bunch of sample carriers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But each empire only has one fighter type. So, and they're pretty slimmed down compared to what you see in SFB. So, for example, all of the Federation carriers have one type of F-18. And I think it's the one that has two phaser three. So no phaser Gs or anything like that. So only the Hydrants get the Gatlings.
Right.
So that also means that, because there's also talk about doing gunboats. And in SFB, the Federation and the Federal Republic of Aurora both have gunboats that are, for the most part, conjectural. Although the Federation in the Darwin's alternate timeline do get to start using gunboats at a certain point. But instead, the historical Feds use the F-111 heavy fighter, which is also on shapeways. But that also means, you know, in FC, based on what's been said on the BBS, it seems to be likely that we won't get the F-111 in FC, that instead the Feds will just be allowed to use their Thunderbolts, which is fine for me, because then I could, like, if for the Omega project, then the Federal Republic could get their conjectural gunboats, and that would make life relatively easier for them too. So,
agreed.
But there hasn't been, just to clarify, for anyone who's interested in those kind of units or not, there have been provisional rules posted for fighter squadrons and also for X-ships, but not yet for fast patrol ships, because it seems that it's a trickier topic in terms of figuring out how gunboats would work, given the vagaries of the rule of the movement cost and all those kind of things.
Right, right.
In SFB, they have a move cost of 1.5, but that doesn't exist in FedCom. So do you go to 1.8, or do you go to 1/4, or do you go to something else, whatever, or... You know, I mean, do you still treat each ship as an individual thing, or do you abstract it somehow, that sort of thing? So I guess we're holding fast for now on the PF front, but there is still definitely material for fighters and X ships that people can play test if they want.
Right, right. You're just reminding me of all that discussion and when that was occurring, which was crazy, because that was one thing. I was looking at my email this past week, and one of the things I found was an old email from I forget who it was, but basically we were discussing about ADDs, anti-drone drones, and then in Federation Commander and modification to the rules and so forth. Do Adrax exist? I don't think they do.
Which?
Adrax.
Say again?
Adrax.
Yeah, there's anti-drone Rax, yeah. I use the rules to try to create playtest rules for the short-range cannon in the FC Omega playtest rulebook as well. So, but they're more, the ADDs are more streamlined than they are, of course, in Starfleet Battles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me see now, because there's a PDF for the reference rulebook, which includes most of the most up-to-date info for people who want to fly the various off-octant empires. So, for example, if you go to somewhere like Warehouse 23 and you purchase the reference rulebook there, you'll get the most recent file. And for people who had already purchased it in the past, they'll get the free update to the current system,
mm-hmm.
so that they won't be left, having to pay again.
Right, right.
So let's see. Anti-drones are listed. Sorry, I'm just flicking through the... Yeah, so they're on page 37 of the most recent revision of the reference rulebook, and they're listed under 4E. So there's rules in there about how the ADD racks work. And also, when you look at a ship card that has those racks, you'll actually see they have ammunition tracks laid out for each ad rack. And also, because the Federation, most of their ship cards have the Type G, the equivalent of what SFB would call a Type G rack. So they would have ADD ammunition and regular drone ammunition.
Right, right. Yeah, well, Type E rack was ad racks and dogfight drones. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was what the E rack was.
Yeah. Type G, not Type E.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Type, well, anyway. But yeah, basically, and also the playtest X ships in Federation Commander, the ones that have drones, have four standard drone ammunition boxes and also four ADD rounds. So, but the thing is that they don't use the same, because in Starfleet battles, X-ships have like three different types of X-drones, including the Type 9 that you were talking with Barry about before. But in Federation Commander, X-ships still use the same drones, albeit at speed 32, that non-X-ships use.
Right. Hmm. That's interesting. It's interesting in that it makes me feel like the goal that I know ADB wanted for X-ships with SFB, which is make sure that you can play X-ships and still play them with the general warships, that era, that can be used together without issue. It definitely seems like there might be more likely when it comes to Federation Commander, though. I think actually I might have that wrong. It might be they were discussed, that was in the case of second generation X ships, which still have yet to be.
Well, one thing that's worth bearing in mind is that I remember this coming up because back when Mongoose were taking the lead with the Call to Arms Starfleet, there was a discussion about X ships on their forum, and a couple of the people posting it were still dealing with the original X1 rules that had been done, like, I guess 30 years ago at this point. But it, just to clarify, for anyone who's interested in Starfleet battles, but who hasn't quite kept up with some of the more recent things, mm-hmm. since about 2003 or 2001,
right.
the X-ship rules have actually been significantly revised. Now, sadly, we haven't yet got a reprinted version of Module X1 itself, but Module X1R has the updated rules. And also, there's a free PDF you can get on the ADB website that lists the changes. So, for example, the original X rules had things like overloaded phasers and the possibility of... what's the one? It's just like something about you blow up your weapons if you roll the dice or something. Misfire.
Misfire, because of like fast load photons, things like that.
Yeah, that's gone entirely now. So what happens now is that, for example, in SFB, if you're using an X-Photon torpedo launcher, you can fast load, but you're limited to 6-point warheads in terms of your partial. I guess like you can do a 150% overload, if that makes sense.
Right.
And the range is limited to 15. So all of the heavy weapons that have a fast load feature, direct fire ones, are limited to range 15 for that fast load shot. And some, but not all, of those weapons that have an overload function have a similar limitation where you're not able to get the full whack that you can if you arm over two turns. But also the double overload thing, the phaser overload thing is completely gone. So the onus is, I mean, you've still got your X-phasers, which are important, but they're not the be-all and end-all in terms of,
right.
like, you still need to figure out how to use your heavy weapons as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually plays a role with the X rules that are for playtest and Federation Commander, because, they're different again, but they're more akin to the current revised rules in SFB rather than the ones that had been in play previously.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. obviously, for those who are not familiar with Federation Commander, one of the things it's a much, if you're familiar with SFB, then Federation Commander is overall not that hard of a leap. The biggest issue usually for people who have moved from SFB to FedCom is movement, movement is a big one. And obviously impulse activity is another one which kind of gotchas, because of, unlike SFB, where you have each and every impulse that you move, you can then have an opportunity to fire or do some kind of activity, you know, whether it's transporters or, you know, as you know, said, fire, launch shuttles, launch seeking weapons, things like that. You can do that every single impulse. Well, what Federation Commander does is it takes those 32 impulses, breaks it up into 8 impulses. Now, you still have 32 impulses possible of movement, which actually, in the case of Federation Commanders, it's a little different in that, in theory, and this is in theory, a ship can actually move speed 32. It is possible for a ship to move 32, and same for basically stay ahead of the any seeking weapons. It is possible. It's hard, but you can do it. Because of the max speed you can plot is 24. And that gives you three. Okay. Each impulse gives you 4 movement subpulses. Yeah. 4 movement subpulses. And those 4 subpulses, depending upon your speed, you have a different kind of impulse, you know, plotting. You know, it's just like the old impulse chart, which, you know, when it comes to your speed, defines what impulses you actually move. Same thing happens with the subpulses. Your speed defines what subpulse you move. Now, in subpulse, at the beginning of the movement, before you get to movement section, you can, what's called, you can pay for accelerated, you can accelerate your movement by 1. So if you're moving 24, you actually can do a 24 plus 1. 24 plus 1 is basically 32 impulses. It's the speed 32, because you're moving every single impulse. And if you do that for every single movement, possible movement, every single subpulse. So if you do that for all 8 impulses, you then have moved 32, speed 32. What would be speed 32 in SFB? Now, because of the way there's 8 impulses, what also happens, you only get to have a fire, launch, so forth, every 4 possible movements. This can trip, this right here. This can trip SFB players up, because of SFB players are so used, get so used to free movement and free decision. And that is that for every impulse, you can decide whether you're going to launch then or fire then, or basically do any kind of impulse activity. While in FedCom, you only get that chance once every 4 possible movements. Now, there's another thing that is available in FedCom that's not available in SFB, which is you can cancel movement. Which is, how the cancel movement in FedCom to me is weird to this day. Because here's the thing. In Federation Commander, you can cancel movement. Now, it's something you can't do in SFB. And that was one of those, you know, when I talked about moving rules back to SFB, that's one of them, which was the idea of actually being able to do an unplotted slow down, a deceleration, by plotting energy to cancel the movement, to decrease your amount of speed, which is basically what you do in FedCom. FedCom, you can cancel movement. It costs you 1 point of movement energy. You know, how much, like if it's a 1, movement costs 1 ship, it's 1 point of energy. If it's half cost movement ship, it only costs you a half point of energy to do that. Now, in FENCOM, if you do that, it's still considered movement. So as whacked as it, to me, it sounds, and as an SMB player, it still to this day sounds really goofy, which is, in theory, you can move, quote unquote, five hexes by canceling five movement along the way, and you can then turn. So what you can do is you can move, like, let's say you do your turn and you move into that one hex. Now, if you cancel the next, whatever, four or five, depending upon how fast you're going, those movements, so you can turn again, then you can then turn and move again without actually moving forward in that, and you know, on the board, another hex. What? You know, it, so you can, in theory, almost do a het without paying for a het. Now, that's another thing that's with Federation Commander, which is the whole idea of high energy turns. In SMB, there's a concept of high energy turns, which is normally you have your normal turn mode. For those people who are not familiar with SMB, turn mode means that you have to move a certain number of hexes forward before you can turn the ship based on the speed of the ship. Now, there's something called a turn mode. Turn mode for a ship. A, B, C, D, or whatever. There's a number. You can have E, you can have F. Jeez, I forget. I think there's even a G, which is really bad. But the idea is the better your turn mode, the more quickly you can change directions. And obviously also the slower your speed, the more quickly you can, the less number of hexes you have to move forward before you can actually turn. So let's say for giggles, Federation Command Cruiser, or even the Test Heavy Cruiser, doesn't matter, either one. They're same. They're basically the same. Moving speed 16, you might take probably four movements forward, 1, 2, 3, 4 hexes, or four canceled movements in FENCOM before you can, after you did that initial turn, then you can turn again. Another 60 degrees. Now, if you're moving speed 8 in that same one, it might only take you probably two. It's two. Probably two. Let's say two. So you'll have to go two X's forward. If that same ship is only moving speed 8, then can go 1, 2, and then turn again. So speed, you know, that speed defines how quickly you can turn. Now, this may, for those of you who don't realize this, I know there are some really smarty pants out there who already realize this, which is, in the case of you get two ships, one is following another one. If you have this guy going and this guy's kind of trying to run around, if this one that's following goes slower than the person you're trying to keep in your you know, ahead of you, you can actually, as he goes around, you can actually, if he tries to make a turn around you, you can actually turn inside him and just keep him inside you. You can go slower, have more energy overall, and still keep him ahead of you. So if he tries to, like, get off, you know, get a new shield facing you, then he has to do something else. You know, he can't just keep going around you. He has to turn away, and then you can come in behind him. You know, so it's interesting in how the speed plays and how, when it comes to turn mode, and how speed plays in SMB and FENCOM. There is a saying in SFB and in FedCom, which is speed is life. And in FedCom, that is truly, truly, truly the thing. Because even FedCom and SFB have this, unlike some games, SFB and FedCom both have the same rule, which is the person moving faster has initiative. Now, if you have two ships that are moving the same speed, but one has a better turn mode, then that person is considered to have the initiative. So the idea is the person who has the speed or overall more maneuverable ship, as defined by the ship itself, has initiative, i.e. you have to move before him. So then he can see where you went to how he's going to react to that. So now, there's a big difference when it comes to SFB and FedCom when it comes to shield reinforcement, because the number of boxes you actually can reinforce a shield in FedCom is defined by the number of non-disabled batteries that you have available to you. For those who know SFB, destroyed. To be honest, to this day, I'm not quite sure why ADB changed that terminology from destroyed to disabled.
Because it's easier to repair boxes and stuff. I mean, FC is basically meant to be, I think the phrase they used before is quote unquote kinder, gentler, or whatever. But the thing that I should point out, though, is that, first of all, I was actually trying to look back at the rules about deceleration. I'm not entirely sure what you're getting at in terms of like being to decelerate and then still moving. I mean, for free or something. Like,
It wasn't acceleration on there. Gary, it wasn't acceleration. It was canceled movement. Canceled movement.
No, but that's basically the term they used is deceleration. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't use the term deceleration. In the case of SF, there was one thing that one of those rules that they tried to bring back to SFB when FedCom first came out, which is the concept of deceleration, unallocated deceleration. Because that's one thing in SFB you can't do. You can do an unplotted acceleration for a speed change, but you could never do a deceleration from your original plot. While in FedCom, you could cancel movement, which is basically kind of a deceleration because you're not actually moving. So that's what I was getting at with the whole idea of deceleration.
I don't know. I mean, like, I'm just trying to go looking at the rule here. I mean, it basically just says that a ship can slow down by using an energy point to buy a deceleration point, which is equal in cost to a movement point. And they actually give an example where, like, say, if you have like a Federation frigate and it's being attacked by a Klingon dreadnought, so it wants to use, because in FC, the deceleration points, if you spend them, they still count as quote-unquote movement for right. the sake of turn modes, but not for side slips. So there's a situation right. where, for example, the Fed wants to burn off the... because it was moving at speed 24, but it doesn't actually want to move those three hexes. It wants to stay in the same hex, but turn to put a fresh shield against the dreadnought or whatever. So it basically shows about how the player is basically able to spend at each point, at each subpulse, he spends a quarter of an energy point to cancel the subpulses and stuff. And then at the end of that, he has a choice of turning 60 degrees, whatever, to face the enemy shield and stuff. But the thing as well is that because this actually goes back to the battery point you were talking about earlier, is that because in SFB, when you're doing an energy allocation, you have to allocate everything except for what goes in the batteries, which is one reason why Andromedans and X-ships have so many options, is because Andromeda batteries and X-ship batteries can take multiple points of power per box,
right?
Whereas like a standard ship only has two. So most of the time you don't really have, like if you have a non-X-ship, there's very few of them that actually have that kind of flexibility. Like you might have one or two points of energy for like a destroyer or something like that, whatever, maybe four for a cruiser. But it's like, it's basically the onus is on planning at the beginning of the turn and what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. Whereas in FedCom, the energy allocation, whatever, it's less complicated, but it also means that whatever you don't allocate at the beginning of the turn, you have in reserve for the remainder of the turn. And then the point that you were talking about earlier about the battery limitation, that comes into play because, say, for example, if you want to reinforce shield, if your ship only has two batteries, then right. you can only reinforce that shield. It's the equivalent of what SFB calls specific reinforcement, because there's no such thing as general reinforcement. Like you can't allocate the power to just bulk up the shields, like using the way you would in SFB. So as you were saying with the Starcasting thing. So, but actually, one thing that's interesting as well is that the playtest rules for X batteries in Captain's Log 53 also have the thing where you have three energy points you can store per battery. Mm-hmm. The only thing though is that so if you have a ship card for an Andromedan ship in Federation Commander, it actually has a battery track for each of the batteries. So that because
correct,
you know, for Andromedans they have to keep track of their energy and so forth in both game systems. Now, for now at least, the ship cards for X ships, they don't have an equivalent battery track. Now, it's not as big a deal, but I personally would prefer it was there. But I mean, that's just my own thing. I mean, like, they're probably not going to be on there. So, I mean, I'll live with it. But it might be an idea for players or playtesters who are trying to use the X-ship ship cards just to use some of the blank space on one of the sides just to make sure that they're keeping track of what's going on with their batteries, because it'll be more than the ship's battery boxes will show.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
I guess the point I was trying to get at is that in Starfleet battles, there's also the thing, because in SFB, you have to use warp net engine power to move your ship. So if you have a ship that has very weak warp engines, because lots of warp reactors, then tough, you still have to only go a certain speed or whatever. And that also plays a role because, I think there's some of the things like, but if you have a higher energy turn or something like that, it has to be warp engine power.
Yes, it does.
Pays for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, so pay for it, or you can use reserve power to do it also. But
yes. So in principle, I mean, like, it's not going to happen. But I think the thing you're trying to get at in terms of like backfitting some of the rules into SFB is that you would basically, instead of, you know, you would, if you had any warpness, the engine power in your batteries, you could then use that to pay to skip a movement point that you would have on the impulse, you know, the movement per impulse chart, whatever that you have, like for SFB.
Right. I think it was
so
more of
That would be kind of like, you know, I don't know how. I mean, that would actually be a thing for X ships as well, because imagine if you start a scenario and now. First generation X-ship batteries can't carry warp power over multiple turns. But if X2 ships could, then that would really be a thing. Because, I mean, like, it'd be interesting to see what kind of tricks that the X2 ships would have. But even for the first turn, you could basically load up the battery, the X batteries, with reserve warp power, warp engine power.
Mm-hmm.
So then, if the FC-ism was in place, you could then try to pick off a couple of individual impulses in terms of movement. Like, you pay for each one. So, I mean, you're still giving away the battery power, but you're not basically able to get the power back by going slower halfway through the turn. So, but at the same time, it would semi mimic what's going on over in Federation Commander.
Yeah,
but
agreed. But,
so,
but
I mean,
I don't think, you know, that SCP, they were looking for an ability to cancel movement, more of, okay, adjust some of the rules that because that's how FedCom is simulating midterm speed changes by, doing the acceleration. Because you can do that for every single impulse. You can decide to, okay, I'm going to pay for an acceleration, which gives you basically, it goes from moving 8 to moving 6, basically moving 16 for that pulse. Or from going from 24 to 32. So, you move one more extra subpulse for that impulse. The big thing with reserve power is with, as you pointed out, with SFB, that it was, since you had to pre-allocate everything, and then you just had this little bit of reserve power which you can play with during the turn. The batteries are critically important for flexibility in SFB versus FedCom. It's all flexible. All batteries currently let you do are two things. One, it tells you how much you actually can reinforce to a shield. Two, it allows you to take power from the previous turn and bring it forward to the next turn. Power, the unused power from the previous turn to bring it to the next turn.
Oh, and one thing I should point out as well is that according to the X battery playtest rules, is that they basically... the whole idea of like 3 points of per battery, it also applies to reinforcements. So say, for example, if you've got a ship that has 6X batteries, you can basically use 18 energy points to, well, if your ship is move cost one, then you could use 18, in theory, use 18 energy points to reinforce a single volley in incoming. But whether you'd want to do that is another story. Actually, as to point out as well, is for anyone who's not familiar with it, is that because in SFB, there's like four main kinds of power. There's warp engine power, there's impulse engine power, there's auxiliary warp reactor power, which is good for things like photon torpedoes or some of the antimatter weapons in Omega, or the OMC for that matter. And auxiliary power reactor, which is basically the same as impulse. So it can be used for anything that doesn't require antimatter.
But impulse allows you to actually do movement.
Yeah, there is that too, yes, of course, for one hex a turn.
Right.
Now, in Federation Commander, there is a scenario has basically the separated saucer for a Fed ship, and it basically has to keep a baseline speed of zero, but it can move, it can do as many as four acceleration points per turn. But overall, in FC, power is power. So... for example, the playtest earlier ships in Captain's Log 39, they are barred from doing baseline speed of 24. So the most you can do is set the baseline speed of 16 and then pay the acceleration points to get to 24. But so it mimics the SFB limitations that way. But in the modern era, you have ships like, say, Romulan and Warbird, where in theory you can make the ship go faster than it can in SFB, but in practice you still have, and also you don't have to worry about things like housekeeping, because, except for the Andromedas, because in SFB, of course, most ships have to pay things like, for example, keeping their shields active or keeping the life support on, that sort of thing, whereas in Federation Commander, most empires don't have to do that, so that is more power that you have in your pocket for army weapons or flying fast or whatever. So, but actually, it is good, though, that you're not able to put that extra power into the shields, whatever, because, yes, you can go faster, but you get punished for not doing so.
Right. Right. Actually, that was one question I was about to ask you, which was, the whole rule about limiting the amount of power that can be put towards the shield reinforcement, which is makes things interesting for X ships, because... I'm not so sure that's a good thing to modify that much to allow from when you have 6 batteries, allow it to use 18 points of power. I understand that you might not want to do that because that's 18 points of power. But still, that's a lot of reinforcement that normally in FedCom you could never do.
Well, the other thing as well is that there's a difference in terms of how the heavy weapons work. So you might find yourself reaching into the cookie jar more often than you do with a non-X ship. So now, we mentioned earlier that in the current version of SFB, some weapons are able to fast load, but they have a certain overload limitation, like the Photon one's a good one. Now, in Federation Commander, the current playtest rules say that you can, like, so for example, Photon Torpedoes, you can fire it every turn, and it has no range limitation, although FedCom doesn't have proximity photons, so photons are really not very useful at long range. But you don't have the ability to overload a photon if you fast load it. So basically, you just have to kind of like decide whether you think it's a worthy change. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, basically, there's. But imagine that even so, and also one thing to bear in mind is that now this isn't necessarily going to apply for X ships versus X ships, but it will apply for like say X ships versus Andromedans or whatever, because there's in the current version of SFB, you basically get +2 bonus ECM, or is it ECCM?
Probably ECCM.
When you're an X ship.
ECCM.
Yeah. And if you have a positive shift in your favor, your direct fire weapons get is going to be on -1 to hit. So if you have a photon torpedo, suddenly your odds of hitting the Andromeda are higher, mm-hmm. or hitting a non-X ship or whatever. So that is also, I mean, they don't bother with the EW aspect, because they basically just say in the Captain's Log 53 that when an X ship fires a direct fire weapon, a non-X ship, it gets a -1 die roll advantage. So, I guess they say, for example, we're talking about the Andromedans, because, I mean, X ships, that's really what historically, in the Alpha Octant anyway, that's really when they came to the forefront, is during the Andromedan War.
Right.
So, if you're basically up against the invaders, you're basically deciding, on the one hand, are you going to use all that extra reserve power to fast load your heavy weapons and try to kind of like press the initiative against the Andromedan ship? Or are you basically worried about incoming TR beam shots or whatever, and basically trying to reinforce your shields so that you're able to hold them off? So, I'd be curious to see, because I'm sure there'll be plenty of opportunity for people to, because there are Andromedan rules in the current version of the reference rulebook as well. There was a expansion back in 2010 called War and Peace, which mm-hmm. included the Andros together with the ISC and Vudar.
Yep.
So, I imagine the only thing is that for now, at least, we don't have the Devastator battleship in FC, but maybe one day, I'm hoping. But I mean, we still have Dominators, so I mean, you can still try to, see how the current range of X ships can handle the Andros,
right?
And see how that goes. So, but I guess the point I was trying to get at is that if you're basically fighting X ship versus X ship, if they're both basically have the option of fast loading or have more weapons and stuff, whatever, against each other, like for example, like the Liren Advanced Command Cruiser has 6 disruptors instead of 4. Are you basically in that situation where, sure, you've got all that reserve power, but then are you burning it off to block the incoming fire, or are you using it to basically, go with the fast loading? Or right. with the putting more power in your XCSGs?
Right. Well, the critical thing when it comes to the X-ships and the batteries at all has to do with what power do you have available. Because if you were able to bring forward that much energy from the previous turn, which is incredible, you're pretty invincible at that point. But it's one of those things, think about it, that it's good for the first hit. Because when you start any scenario in FedCom, the batteries are full. The batteries are full from the, that's a lot of energy. Because I don't think Do the X-ships in FedCom, because I'm being honest, I haven't looked at them. Do they increase the number of power that they have? Other than the X
batteries? No, they have about the same. Do you have your copy of Captain's Log 53 there?
Not right in front of me. No, it's downstairs.
Okay. So are you on the Commander Circle? You know, it's on that portion of the ADB website. Are you on, I guess, of course, you're on the internet because we're talking. I mean, you're recording. But what I mean is, can you bring up the communiques? Like, can you have a look on there in the Commander Circle and, you know, open up one?
Let me see. Ba, ba, ba. There. Well, I'm actually, this is the wrong place where I went. Where I should have gone was there and .com. Okay. Commander Circle.
Yep.
Which communique?
Okay. So in CL53, there's a list of where most of the ones to this point have been posted. So now we'll stick with the feds because we've been talking about the Federation for a while. Go to communique 147.
Okay. Da, 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 da. 147. Okay. Got it up. Except preview.
So, yeah, have a look for that. You've got the Federation Advanced War Destroyer sample is in there. So if you scroll down to it, stick with the squadron scale now because we'll leave the scale aside for now. But squadron scale is the one that's most akin to standard SFBE.
Right.
Fleet scale is more akin to cadet scale, but we'll stick with squadron scale for now.
Oh, understood.
But yeah, you can actually see there, if you have a look.
Let's not talk about squadron versus fleet because that was a mistake. In my mind.
Anyway, so if you have a look for the ammunition tracks we were mentioning earlier about the drones and stuff, mm-hmm. you'll see that it's got four standard size boxes, like rectangles,
right.
and it's got the four little ADD boxes and stuff. So you'll see that same ammo track for like Klingon and wind cluster X-ships and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's on the same level there. But yeah, you'll also see... it's got the regular shields, like boost that you see on the... Because the SFB version of this ship is in module X1R. So it was actually written with... It was designed, I should say, with the current SFBX rules in mind. So because the thing is, some of the older... one of the things is that some of the older X ships in module X1, they had some very significant point value adjustments in X1R to kind of... account for the fact that the rules are different in terms of how you use them.
Right.
If you can see on there, that gives you a good sense. I mean, about how the current setup, basically, instead of having a separate X battery track, the way that the Andromedan X ship cards have, you basically just see that the total has been added to the power track on the right hand side of the ship card.
Hmm.
And also, you'll notice if you look at the weapons used for the phasers, you see that there's a little kind of rectangle that's underneath them.
Yes.
That is basically representing the rapid pulse rules.
Oh, okay.
So so in SFB, X ships all have like a limited version of the Aegis fire control system. So they have a thing where basically if you're shooting against drones or seeking weapons, fighters, or gun boats, you can basically split a phaser one into two phaser threes.
Right.
And basically you have the Aegis rules. Now, there is a version of Aegis fire control in FC, but it works totally differently. And also, now the X-ships don't have it in the current version of the rules. So I guess you could say the X-ships are more streamlined than in SFB.
Mm-hmm.
But the X phasers still have the option of being split to shoot against seeking weapons or shuttles and stuff. Now, the current rules don't say anything about gunboats, but that's because there aren't any gunboats for them to be used against anyway. But we'll have to see what will happen, if slash when we get playtest gunboats, how those rules interact there. But it's a handy way to basically just keep track of what you're doing as you're flying the ship, like if you are basically trying to shoot down enemy seeking weapons and stuff.
Understood.
But yeah, I guess in terms of like whether or not there's too much reserve power in the ships as it is, I guess one handy thing about playtesting is that now that they're now hopefully like that's one of the ships that you have now on FC Online, is that that might be an opportunity, because especially with COVID-19, I mean, there's not a lot of opportunities for people to play face-to-face games of Federation Commander right now.
Agreed.
They have to live in the same house. But with FC Online, that would be like an opportunity to basically just give these rules a try and see, I mean, are they working out as well as they should, or is it not quite working out with the amount of free power that you already have in FC? Like, is it going a bit overboard or not?
Right. That's one thing I'm going to have to, I might actually have to modify the client a little bit to support some of the, definitely to support some of the FedCom rules. But I can definitely, at the very least this weekend, I can put the X ship up there, though the rules won't be applied because of the FedCom portion of the client is a lot more rules based. It tries its best to follow the rules of FedCom versus SAB, which is a lot more lax. It's more of a, it's a play tool. It's a gaming tool, so you actually can play SFB, but it doesn't force you to comply with the rules. While the FedCom is more, okay, these are the rules. This is how you do things. So you, not that you can't cheat, but it makes it hard for you to not do things correctly. But at the same time, that there's the other end of the spectrum, which runs into the issues, which is if I don't get it 100% correct, then there's no, it makes it really hard for the player to actually correct for the error in the client. So I think that's why I heard someone mention that the FedCom portion is not as robust as the SAP, which is it's more restrictive. It tries to follow the rules and is a little hard to adjust for when the rules aren't correctly implemented.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a few other, if you want to bring up another sample X ship, you could have a look at Communique 161.
Okay, the Bengal Tiger. Okay, that's a fleet scale. Give me the squadron. Damn. 40 points of warp power, 6 impulse, and 4 reactors. Good bit of power. That's 50 points of power. Dang.
And it's usually because modern ESGs can take 5 points of power, and in this case, the ex-ESGs can take 7. But actually, what's one other thing as well, because for anyone who's listening who's familiar with the Lyrans in SFB, the SFB Lyrans, the ESG, they only get a capacitor refit at a certain point. So if you're playing middle years Lyrans, you have to pay at the point of use.
Right.
But the ESG, it creates the circle basically instantaneously. And you choose what distance the circle is from the ship, and then it's like a persistent effect for a certain length of time.
Mm-hmm.
In FC, it's entirely different. It's literally an expanding sphere of energy. It affects only in the moment it's activated. And
right.
What it does is that basically it starts off damaging anything that's in the same hex as the Lyran ship, and then moves to the 6 adjacent hexes only. So it doesn't go to 2 or 3 hexes.
Right.
And that actually is important because in the middle years, because in SFB, usually when you see an SSD, it shows you the refits on the SSD itself. So you can choose yourself what time period you're going to set this big scenario in and which refits are in place.
Right.
So for example, if you want to say a Federation CA that has no drones, you can go back to ye olden times when it had no drones. But in FC, there are distinct middle years and modern main era ship cards. So there was a product called Briefing 2, which is available as PDFs as well, where you have the middle years versions of these ships. Right. So, for example, there's a middle years version of the Lyran Tiger heavy cruiser, but because they don't have capacitors, it's actually very pressing compared to SFB, because if you want to put 5 energy points into an ESG, it only works at that moment. So, and also when you're a Lyran ship and you've got disruptors, you've got phasers and stuff, that's also the time that you're basically trying to use that power to use those weapons to shoot at the other guy. So it's much more of a serious issue in terms of actually allocating that power. So Lyrans in the modern era have it much easier because the FC version of the ESG has a capacitor system. So you can store the energy in the ESG before you use it.
Right.
So that's one thing I like. I think it's interesting as well, because I think it'd be pretty cool if there was an alternate firing mode for the ESG and X2 that worked like the FC version of the ESG. Because I think that would definitely, that would give the Lyrans in the X2 era a little bit extra character. But so as to avoid, panic, you would still allow ESGs in X2 to work like a traditional SFB ESG. So it wouldn't take over the function. It would be an additional option.
Right.
That's my own personal preference anyway.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah. I think there's quite a few people that actually can't wait for the X2. But at the same time, we have no clue what that's going to look like. There's been multiple things that have been talked about, I know, in the past, like structure and structural integrity fields and things like that. Something that's new and different, something to go forward with. Yeah.
Well, the talk on a few years back on the DBS was that they were basically going to have like a 50% / 200% rule, where if an X2 ship is fighting a ship that's not X2, it does 200% more damage and it takes 50% less damage. But I guess what you would do then is that, because if you look at if you have the ship card in front of you there for the Lyran CCX. Its shields are already about a third as strong as those on a non-X Lyran command cruiser.
Correct.
It already has like 20 box nacelles rather than 15 box nacelles. So if you didn't have some sort of modifier, then what would you do if you started having cruisers that had a third again as many boxes? And, big engines and stuff.
But at the same time, Gary, there is the one other possibility, which I haven't heard anyone mention. It's possible that my husband mentioned. But the whole idea of the X ship batteries, that is one box of warp actually produces like 3 points of warp. So
I don't know about that, but there is buried in the reference rulebook, SFB master rulebook, there is like a suggestion now, whether or not it'll remain true when X2 comes out, but there's a suggestion that X2 batteries take 5 points of power and they can reserve warp power over multiple turns.
Right.
So, but what I was trying to get at is that if you introduce this concept of 50% / 200%, you can then create an SSD or a ship card for an X2 ship that when you're fighting another X2 ship, it actually works relatively reasonably. Like you're not basically, right. It's not like having 2 dreadnoughts fight each other all the time. It's actually 2 cruisers or 2 destroyers, or whatever.
Right.
But you're still accounting for its historical betterness compared to older ships.
Superiority, yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically kind of like, but I mean, there's a lot of argument about whether that's going to happen or not. So we'll have to wait and see. Anyway, also, one other thing I should say is that for anyone who's wondering what the hell an X-ship is, the modern, main era of both Starfleet Battle and Federation Commander is, of course, based on the original series and the Starfleet Technical Manual. So the standard technology is what you'd see on a Constitution class or a Klingon D7 or whatever.
Right.
So first-generation X-ships represent new, more advanced technologies with new types of minerals that have to be mined, because like in F&E, you have to basically create a whole new resource stream to get those X components. So you can input this X technology onto an older ship, but there's a limit. Like you can't do an X dreadnought, for example, and there's like only so far the ships can go. So for example, that Lyran ship you're looking at right now, that's about as good as the Lyrans could do with first generation X technology. So with X2, that's basically going to be about 25 years afterwards. They're going to be the first ships built entirely from the keel up to incorporate this new X technology. And that's what's going to make them more, you know, integrated as a whole, design-wise. So I guess if you go back in time to the early years, it's like how some of the early ships, like the Terran light cruiser, there was a warp-refitted version of it where they slapped on a few tactical warp engines and the ship could go faster and it can use weapons like photons and stuff. But it wasn't until the subsequent generation of ships that were built for tactical warp that the whole thing started to kind of come together and build towards the kind of the constitution design that we mm-hmm. are familiar with.
Right. So, oh, understood.
That's one of the really cool things about both SFB and FC is that there is that sense of design evolution and that it's laid out clearly and that, you know, it's it has that luxury compared to the franchise in terms of being able to, you know, say this is how you get between one or the other and this is how they interact and stuff, because I mean there is technological progression in the franchise, but because anything that's in print is not canon, it has to be spelled out for you on screen. If it's not like retconned by something that's, you know, happens in a later TV series or whatever.
Right.
So
which is always harder to... Well, with ADB, that's always the issue, that they have to make sure that they don't even look like the later TV series, because of they're mm-hmm. not, they have not licensed those ships. So, which brings up obviously the whole thing when it comes to X2, which is what will like the miniatures look like?
Well, it's good that we have Shapeways now, because I think that gives us, like, if you look at Will McCammon's work on the CX, the Federation X ship, and the Klingon DX, they look they basically look like, you know, if somebody took the original series ships and, not following the motion picture, went in an entirely different direction, but was the onus was to try and show this is basically the next design evolution, but using the same hull.
Oh, understood. So, understood. But the thing is, what is the next leap in design of the ships when it comes to second generation? Will it change even more when it comes to second generation? What would that look like? Of course, we might never find out, because it doesn't seem like a top priority to get the X2 ships out at the moment when it comes to ADB. And that's fine. It's their prerogative. It's their company. They have to put out what sells. You know, I totally understand that. And Lord knows if it didn't, you know, if it kept on putting out products that didn't sell, well, then ADB wouldn't be in existence and we'd have a big problem. Because if ADB didn't exist, I don't want to think about licensing at that point.
Well, one thing as well is that up until, like, it was like when X ships first generation X ships, I should say, when they first came into existence in SFB, it wasn't really all that clear about what they did, because, I mean, the bulk of the game was still focused on the general war, and X ships were kind of like tacked on to near the end.
Right.
So, since then, we've now seen, like, Module X1R in particular goes a long way towards really fleshing out the era of X ships and explaining, like, why these ships are so important and tying it to the Andromedan War in a way that doesn't really, but basically it makes that war so specific. And actually, this is one reason why, okay, so I guess in the past, in previous episodes, we may have talked about the different history articles there have been about the Andro War,
right,
in Bog and so forth. So now, of course, we know, now I'm saying of course, because there's why some people are wondering who the Andromedans, but anyway, most standard Alpha Empires, they have bases, and you can basically go faster between two bases than you can under your own power, because the bases act as waypoints.
Like beacons,
Beacons, that's right. So usually the empires, what they'll do is that they'll lay out a map, of course. Now, also, they have to basically have ships. I guess they'd have to travel along this course to make sure that you don't run into a black hole or a pulsar or anything like that, because when you're going at the fastest dash warp speeds, you can't see what's ahead of you as clearly. So it takes work, basically. And also, it's not, it's fast, but it's like a luxury. So, like, for example, if you're the Federation in Federation of the Empire, each turn takes about 6 months. You only have 15 points of strategic movement that you can make. So that means that if you have a fleet of 300 ships or whatever, you can only move 15 of those ships maximum using strategic movement. And even then, you would still have to use like cruising speed or operational movement to get in and out of a fight. So it makes a big difference if you have ships on the Klingon border and the Romulan border. It takes a long time to shift resources from one side to the next. So most of the wars that were fought in the Alpha Octant between the Ferrish and Klingons, with the Klingons and Sintis and so forth, they depended on these limitations, because it was actually even slower in the days of the Four Powers War, like the wars like of the Middle Years,
right,
because your bases could only supply you a certain distance in, like, you know, forward, like 4 hexes out of 6 or whatever. So that's basically what empires were used to. But the Andromedans are totally different, because their bases were designed, every one of them was designed to work as part of a thing called the Rapid Transit Network. And a ship that moves strategically on the transit network is 3 times faster than a ship in the Alpha Octant using its strategic movement. And all of the Andromedan ships can use the RTN to basically skip across the galaxy, our portion of the galaxy, mm-hmm, and strike where they need to.
Right.
So was critically important to try and shut down those bases once we figured out what they actually were. So this is why Module X1R is so interesting, because one of the key things that it provides is that when the empires and the Alpha Octant were still focused on each other, they were looking at these X ships and trying to think, well, what can I actually do with them? So one idea was to basically take a cruiser, an X cruiser, and then slap on a couple of sensors and either a squadron of F-111s or a flotilla of PFs, and use them to do raids against the other guys. That didn't really work out too well, because once these other guys got X-ships, it was too easy for them to counter those raids. And so the ships were kind of like, you know, they didn't have a purpose as much. So, for example, the Federation, they did this with the ship called the Colin Powell. It was like it looked like a galactic survey cruiser, but it had mech links, so you could support 6 F-111 heavy fighters. And at the end of the war, the Starfleet decided that this ship might as well be sent to do actual survey work. So they replaced the F-111s with heavy transport shuttles, so it'd be easier to kind of get, you know, crews down to a new planet's surface to investigate the locals and that sort of thing. So when the Andromedans started kicking things off, they put the F-111s back in and used the fight. But they were still in the situation where the Andros could show up anywhere, and you weren't always with a squadron, so you had to kind of like, you know, react rather than act. But then once they figured out what about the X base, the satellite bases, it became critically important to be able to get to the base before the Andromedans could move it, and destroy the base before they could reinforce it. And or if the base was too big, that you could basically not get killed long enough so that reinforcements can arrive and help you out. So that is where ships like the Colin Powell or the Advanced Galactic Survey Cruisers or the Romulan, because the Romulans had a couple of Sparrowhawks with E-module, Sparrowhawk X's that had E-modules, so they could use those to as a force multiplier, because when you were searching for an Andromedan base, you had to be by yourself. Otherwise, the sensors got screwed up. So it was imperative that your ship could then accelerate to the base and then start attacking. So it was ships. That was basically one of the reasons why these X-Raiders became, they changed the course of history, because they were the ships that were, they were the only ships that could do all three of the things needed to get rid of the Andromedan bases in time, like to try to flatten the curve, as certain health experts are saying, you know, about a real life danger in the present day.
Right.
So that is actually kind of one of the things that makes the X era so interesting. So I'd really be curious to see, is, because I mean, of course, with FC Online and the possibility of playtesting the X ship rules, one of the goals will be, one of the important points will be to have them fight each other and see how that works out.
Right.
But I really think it would be interesting to not only start getting some of these X-Raiders into playtest in FC and do a scenario where you're going after a satellite base or a battle station or whatever, but then also try to see about things like Operation Unity. I mean, like how well that campaign can play out in FC with the X ships in place. Although there isn't, for now, there isn't a ship card for the Desecrator Starbase, so finishing Unity might be a problem.
Right.
But you see what I'm trying to get at.
Oh, I mean, understood. But even without the X ships, you know, how many people are actually going to play that kind of campaign? To find out, you know, oh, how do they work with the Unity campaign? That's just not that many people play the Unity campaign as it stands, because usually it requires somebody who wants to play the Andromedans, you know, and which is a few, it's a breed which is very in short supply.
Well, that's where the FC Andromeda rules come in, because, once the client is able to support it, then perhaps it might be a thing to try to make available to people and so forth, because they're much less work than in Starfleet battles, but they are still quite distinct. So maybe it might be more fun for people to basically be the Andromedans in FC. But I guess in the long run, I think what will be really interesting is to see the Andromedans in A Call to Arms, because I think that game system would be might be able to handle some of the larger encounters more easily than either SFP or FC.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Okay, a couple things. Number one, when it comes to the Andromedans, FedCom still holds some of those difficulties that are in SFB, some of the difficulties, because of you have the whole issue of balancing the panels and getting energy out of the panels so that you can actually have enough of a shield, a quote unquote shield, to defend against. So you still have to worry about the whole transfer of power. And of course, given that for the Andromedans, for the Federation commander, they do not have the idea of standard and reinforced levels, it makes it even more difficult to do the whole panel dump thing. Now, obviously, the one thing which I think I mentioned last week about the Andromedans, which is kind of unique about FedCom, which is paying for panels. You can basically only, if you only bring up the front panels, you can only have to pay when it comes to the energy cost for the front panels. You don't have to pay for the rear panels, which can be good, but it also can be very bad, because invariably, what's one thing the Andromeda's trying to do? Andromeda's trying to do to use as much energy as possible to get rid of it from their panels. So that's still a measure of complexity that some people don't want to deal with.
Well, the other thing to bear in mind is that in SFB, the Andromedans have to worry about things like degradation, where the ability to store energy in their panels goes down over time, whereas in FC, they don't have that, even against disruptors.
The thing is, the only reason that was even added to the rules at all, because they found out, oh, it was way too powerful. If you didn't have some kind of degradation to degrade the ability of the panels to actually absorb damage. Who was it? I think it was Anthony Medici, the original high commander of the Andromedan invaders for SAB when they had those kind of things back in the day. That he showed how you could actually fly, I think it was a Cobra against a Federation CA and beat it. You know, at least I think that's the way at least I heard about it. I didn't see the numbers, so that was, as I said, that's what I think it was in the designer's note with the Doomsday Edition that they put out, the Captain's Edition. Only people who've been with ADB for that long know when I refer to the Doomsday Edition. But anyway, the whole thing with Call of Arms and also Starmada is trying to model that dynamic without modeling that dynamic. Because the thing is, with Call to Arms and Starmada, both of them, they don't have, it's not an energy-based system at all. The way that system works is totally different in the way the dynamics of the ships actually work.
Well, there is the thing called power drain that they have in the Call to Arms, where if you are doing certain things like arming heavy weapons or whatever, then it basically limits the amount of things that you can otherwise do in terms of like moving your ship or whatever. So I don't know. I mean, we've still got a couple of books to go because the next book for Call to Arms is supposedly going to introduce Valyrians and Hydrans and LDR and stuff. So mm-hmm. It might be a while before they get the Andros. But I don't know. I mean, it won't look the same, of course. But I think that there might be some ways to, look at it in a different way and so forth. Whatever. So I don't know. But I guess time will tell on that one.
Oh.
But agreed. I do think that in terms of scale, because it would be a good system to basically break out things like the Devastator Battleship, because even in a game like SFB and so forth, I mean, it's a lot to try to get into a scenario. And whereas in something like a Call to Arms, because the thing is based around fleets anyway, you would have more flexibility in terms of getting these bigger ships on the table.
Oh, agreed. When you have fleets in mind, obviously one thing that you need to do is abstract out certain parts of those ships. Depends on how much you want to abstract it, really. But on that, because otherwise therefore it makes simulating battles a lot easier when it comes to those large fleets versus like SFB. Lord knows, I've played some large fleet battles in SFB, and those will take 8, 9, 10, 12 hours to play out. It's just incredible the amount of time. And of course, just going back to one thing I mentioned earlier, which is the whole idea of FEDCOM and the fleet scale, this scale, for those who are watching the video, was that, with fleet scale, you actually could play a larger battle in the same amount of time that you could do a squadron battle. That was so wrong. Because of the big issue with it, of course, is that what happens with the fleet scale? It reduces both the shield, it reduces the weapons, it reduces the power, everything by half. So everything is reduced. So you don't reduce the time by reducing basically the weaponry and power of the ship. It keeps the dynamic, the relative dynamic when it comes to offensive and defensive, the same. You really want to decrease fleet battles? That's easy. Decrease the amount of defense. That means...
I thought you were going to say decrease the number of impulses. So,
no.
Like you could have... Because I think that's what cadet scale does. It has only like, is it 16 impulses compared to 32 in standard SFB?
Well, it depends upon which one you're using. But yeah, you can. It's like 16 or possibly 8. It's been a while since I looked at the cadet training manual. But yeah, the number of impulses are...
I could definitely see a fleet scale version of FC that used maybe 4 impulses instead of 8. And... you know, the onus, because I think it wouldn't be quite as going as far as a call to arms, which is only has like one firing opportunity per turn. But it would still be a way to kind of head in that direction.
Right. Well, so. Okay. If you want to go there, we'll go there. And that is that in my mind, you want to speed up. Okay. Obviously the one thing, easy way to speed up things is decrease the defense so that the offense can basically blast through and blow up ships a lot quicker. That's one way to quickly resolve fleet battles. Obviously, the dynamics of those ships changes greatly by doing that. Okay, but the other one, which is I really feel deep down in my heart, would help speed up combat. Pre-plotted movement. You know, if you want to go to the, you know, 4 impulses per turn, that means 8 sub-impulses. That means for every impulse, for all the movement, it's pre-plotted. There's no decisions. You just pre-plot, okay, I'm going to move here, 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 here. You guess or you don't guess right. That's it. And if you don't guess right, you don't guess right. You know, everyone makes the mistake. But there's no more deciding... for that. Now, obviously, there are some people who then would go, well, then, you know, I'm just going to go slower then. It's like, yeah. But the person who can outguess you and move faster will beat you. So that's why I think in my mind, pre-plotted movement is a way to speed up play. And I've always loved pre-plotted movement. That's one of the reasons why I was drawn into Starmada, was the first time I ever played it, we used pre-plotted movement. Okay, here's the movement for this turn. Bum, 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 boom. Okay, everyone plots it? Everyone done? Okay, go. And that, in my mind, if you get used to that way of thinking, the game will actually move faster. Maybe
that would work for pay by email or something.
Yeah, actually, that was one of those things that I was thinking about as for play by email for FedCom. In my mind, you can what you could do, since other than launching seeking weapons, which is an issue, everything is me too in FedCom. You say, oh, I'm going to fire. Okay, I'm going to fire too. And that's fine. The reason why I bring it up is that the whole idea of using a moderatorless play-by-email game. You know, for like Federation Commander, no moderator. You allow me too firing, me too launches. You still have to go through each segment. It might take you a little longer when it comes to the different segments of the impulse. But, okay, movement's pre-plotted. You know, you get to each segment. Okay, are you going to cancel movement? You do acceleration. Acceleration, yes or no. Okay, you decide then. You announce it. Your opponent knows what's going to happen there. You pre-plot your 4 sub-pulses, or you want to go for 8, go with 8. And then go into the next segment, bum, 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 bum. You know, defense, fire, launching. I think it's defensive fire, then launching, and then offensive fire. I forget there's the systems. But, you know, you can possibly do it without a moderator. I think it'd be kind of a cool idea to see if that would actually work. It definitely, it's a new version of FedCom. It'd be interesting to see how the whole thing worked. And if there's anyone out there who would like to play that, feel free to contact me. I would be more than happy to play. try to play a moderatorless FedCom play by email game. So with that, I think we will wrap it up for this evening. It's already running a little bit later than I really like, because unlike some people, I actually work in the morning. And I apologize for those people I do just offended because they don't have a job, and I'm sorry. I just realized that was a dumb thing to say. I apologize. I'm sorry. But I have to wake up bright and early, like 5 o'clock, and it's already past 11. So it's going to be a very quick nap. So Gary, it was wonderful to have you on and discuss Federation Commander Nick ships.
Yep. And, hopefully more people will get a chance to, play test these rules and the other things that are out there to play test for FC. And hopefully this will be a great opportunity to help move the game system forward.
Agreed. Agreed. Okay. Well, you have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. So had a nice long discussion about Federation Commander. Went a little bit different than I expected. Obviously compared a lot with SFB, and also we talked about the X-Ships quite a bit, both some of the historical context, but also how the differences are when it comes to Federation Commander with X-Ships, and Lord knows those playtest rules are going to be interesting to see how they all work out because of the whole idea of the batteries. The amount of reinforcements no longer be controlled by the actual number of batteries concerns me. Now, obviously, as I pointed out earlier, which is that will be remain to be seen. Also, it's a one-time thing. It's at the very beginning of the game when you have full batteries. Now, obviously, there's the big issue, which I just noticed, which is the X-Ships have a lot more power, so it's possible they might easily be able to recharge those batteries, which makes it really hard for a general warship to fight an X-Ship because they have 3 times the amount of reinforcement, possibly on any turn, and at the very least 2 times, because I can easily see them not using up all of their energy each turn and having batteries available every single turn. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.